Hello, everyone. Well, today we're going to explore together being confident and creative disciples of Jesus Christ. And as we know, we're looking through the series of elements outlined in the Diocesan Strategy Vision. And just to remind you, what the vision says is that by God's grace, we want to be people who are confident and creative disciples of Jesus Christ, rooted in scripture and drenched in prayer. And if you remember, Alan talked about this 2 weeks ago. Living gratefully, giving generously, caring for creation and sharing the gospel, which Phil shared with us 3 weeks ago. Growing in number and expectation of God and ourselves, which Phil will talk about next week, hopefully in the churchyard before our picnic. And motivated by justice and love, which Gordon talked about 4 weeks ago, open to the Spirit and ready for adventure. But if you remember, it closes with, therefore we will. So what I'd like to do this morning is to use Luke chapter 10, verses 1 to 12 and 16 to 17, to enable us all to reflect upon what a confident, creative disciple of Jesus Christ looks like. And ask ourselves, do we look like confident, creative disciples ourselves, or do other people see us as confident, creative disciples? And then ask ourselves, not only do we look like it, but are we confident and creative disciples? And if not, what changes are we going to make, or do we need to make? And what will we do in order to make those changes? And my second question to reflect on is, what is our vision for increasing the kingdom in the future? What new things will we do, or what will we continue to do together and individually in order to grow the kingdom? So that brings us back to the question, really, therefore we will. And I'm sure you remember a couple of weeks ago, Alan shared with us that we have to work out for ourselves what we will do with the help of God. Now, normally when we have a talk, we have the talk and then we have a discussion at the end of the talk. But today I'd like to change that a little bit, and I'd like to have the discussion within the talk. Now, nobody panic. Those of you who just prefer to listen, that's fine. But those of you who are happy to take part, sharing your thoughts, your knowledge and your ideas, I'll be welcoming those during the talk. So before I start the talk, I'd like to ask Gordon to read Luke 10, 1 to 12 and 16 to 17 for me, please.
As Karen said, this is Luke 10, 1 to 12 and 16 to 17. And this is the New Testament for Everyone version. That's Tom Wright's personal translation. After this, the master commissioned 70 others and sent them ahead of him in pairs to every town and place where he was intending to come. There's a great harvest out there, he said to them, but there aren't many workers. So plead with the harvest master to send out workers for the harvest. Off you go now. Remember, I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. Take no money bag, no pack, no sandals, and don't stop to pass the time with anyone on the road. Whenever you go into a house, first say, peace on this house. If a child of peace lives there, your peace will rest on them. But if not, it will return to you. Stay in the same house and eat and drink what they provide. The worker deserves to be paid, you see. Don't go from house to house. If you go into a town and they welcome you, eat what is provided. Heal the sick who are there and say to them, God's kingdom has come close to you. But if you go into a town and they don't welcome you, go out into the streets of the town and say, here is the very dust of your town clinging to our feet, and we're wiping it off in front of your eyes. But you should know this, God's kingdom has come close to you. Anyone who hears you, hears me. Anyone who rejects you, rejects me. And anyone who rejects me, rejects the one who sent me. The 70 came back exhilarated. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Gordon. So the reading opens with, after this. And just so as you know where we are, this is referring to the fact that Jesus has resolutely set off for Jerusalem, where he's to be crucified. So he's making his final journey into Jerusalem. Now, this is not the first time that Jesus has sent others out in front of himself. In Matthew 10, we see Jesus sending out the 12 apostles to share the good news with the Jews, with a very similar message that he's giving to the 70 others that he's now sending out to share the good news again with the Jews, that take nothing with you, and I'm sending you out like lambs amongst wolves. But I'd suggest to you that this sending out is different from the one when he sent the 12 apostles out. I suggest to you that there's a lot more urgency here. The reading says, off you go now. So it seems as though Jesus is quite, it's quite important to Jesus that they just go. They don't spend time talking or discussing it. He wants them to go to these places. He's told them where he wants them to go, and he wants them to go now. And he also says, I'm sure you've noticed, don't stop to pass the time with anyone on the road. In other words, just get where you've got to go to. We know that Jesus will not himself enter the place, these places again. As I've said, this is his last journey into Jerusalem. And he knows that if the people in every town and place that he intends to go don't receive the good news, if they reject him, if they reject his message, it may be too late for them. In going in a different direction from God, in other words, in not listening to Jesus, they're likely to get caught up with the destruction of the temple by the Romans in less than 40 years' time, which was spoken about by Daniel, so they should have known about that. And also the diaspora, I think I've said that right, that follows when the Jews are scattered all around the world as a result of the Romans. So what's Jesus doing with the 70 others? And I'd suggest to you what he's doing is he's sending them out to help him lead a new exodus, a freedom from the oppression of sin, from the corrupt religious leaders. He's wanting them to help the people that they meet in these other places to find a place of peace, of shalom, rather than the conflict that they're living in at the moment. I'm sure you remember that during the original exodus from Egypt to the Promised Land, the Israelites don't want to go the way God's leading them. They're moaning, they're rebellious. They want to do things their way. And here, despite the fact that Jesus has provided powerful teaching, he's healed people, he's performed miracles, he's shown excellent leadership, unconditional love to everyone, they still are rebellious. Many don't want to go the way Jesus is leading them. It's not the way they want to go. It's as we looked at a couple of weeks ago in the parable of the old and new wineskins, which is seen in three of the four Gospels. They just want to do things their way. They don't want to listen. So what Jesus has shared with the 70 others is that there is a great harvest out there, but there aren't enough workers. So he's asked them, as the reading says, to plead with the harvest master, that's God, to send out workers for the harvest. So in other words, what he wants is for us to create more disciples, to create more disciples. So what he's asked them to do, as he says, is to plead with the harvest master. So that's the requirement of them to pray, but not only pray, to take action in order, as I've said, we can make disciples from disciples and increase the kingdom. And he's sending them ahead of him in pairs to each town and place where he intends to go. And what he's wanting them to do is something that Phil talked about a number of weeks ago. He's asking them to sow the seeds. God himself will manage the harvest, but he wants them to sow the seeds. He wants them to share the good news. He wants them to recognize that the way that Jesus is leading them is the way that they should be going. But he's reminded them that he's sending them out like lambs among wolves and told them that they need to take no money bag, no pack and no sandals. And as I said, don't stop to pass the time with anyone on the road. Go directly to where I'm sending you to do the role that I've given you. So my question to us all, you could take yourselves off mute if you'd like to answer the questions. My first question to you is, how happy would we have been to have been one of the 70 others commissioned to be sent out like lambs amongst wolves to share the will of God. Any thoughts?
I think there would be some fear and trepidation there, wouldn't there? It's one thing to be sent to give good news, but you don't actually know, none of them knew what the reception would be, and indeed what would happen to them, hence the thing about lambs amongst wolves. And this could be dangerous, not only dangerous to the people they went to, but of course it was quite dangerous travelling around as well.
The fear of the unknown, Gordon.
Mm.
That's the thing, isn't it? Not knowing. It's a step of faith. It's really a question of how strong your faith is. We don't know much about these 70 others, do we? But I guess they were handpicked for faith.
I expect they were like all of us.
Yes, just normal. Ordinary, but trust.
But also handpicked.
Pardon?
But also handpicked.
Yes, I think they perhaps were chosen, yes, to have an understanding of what they were being required to do.
Go, Judith.
I wonder if it depended on their mindset. Because at the moment, if somebody said that to me, I'd be straight out of the door, happily.
Good.
Because they would be, if they had listened to what he said about being crucified, and I mean, I know some of them didn't quite get it, they might have felt a sense of urgency. So I think it might be horses for courses, you know. And as I say, after being stuck in here for 18 months, not seeing anybody, I would be straight out of the door. I really would. I wonder how long it takes before people are sort of pushed. You know, I got up this morning saying to myself, I have to do something. I can't stay here any longer. So I it depends on the world, I suppose, at the time as well for them.
Yeah. But I think, as Gordon said, the reality is that they, and as Annie said, they were handpicked, but we're handpicked as well. So I suspect that these people, these 70 others, were very similar to us, you know, very, very, very similar people. Elaine, were you?
No.
Okay.
I think it's my question for myself would be, how easily would I be able to let go of those worldly things? Because it's all very easy to read, you know, that they weren't to take anything with them. And that means letting, if you think of them like us today, what would you have to walk away from? And when I was preparing for the prayers, it's interesting Judith said about mindset, because what I was led to was a website about kingdom mindset and how it's in every decision that you make, every thought that you have, every action that you do, to sort of point it back to Jesus. And it made me reflect about how often I don't do that, and I just kind of make decisions and do things based on my own sort of worldly priorities, really. So I think leaving all of that behind, when you look at what that would have meant in reality, would have been huge, and certainly would be huge for people now.
And that leads me on to my second question. But before I do that, I just to remind us all that, you know, the lambs amongst wolves sounds absolutely horrendous. And clearly, as some people have said, that was probably how it felt, because it was dangerous to travel in those days. And as we say, we don't know these villages that we or they were being sent to. But I think what we have to remember is that God, Jesus, is the shepherd of the sheep. So although he was sending them ahead of him, he was following them. And at all times, he was with them and present with them. So in actual fact, as dangerous as it is, they have God with them. And I think that's one of the things that we always have to remember, that we have God with us. But my second question it was to take no money bag, no pack, no sandals. How would we feel, and Katie's already introduced this, how would we feel about that? You know, if today we were told, you don't need any of your worldly belongings, but what I want you to do is to go out into the world, into your village, into your street, wherever you're sent, and you know, share the good news, but don't take anything with you.
No. Would they be allowed a staff, Karen?
Do you think? It doesn't say.
Doesn't say, does it?
No, but I should think they could have a walking stick as start.
No, I was going to say that would be a normal equipment, wouldn't it? Yeah. I know Katie's already said about moving on and leaving behind all the things that would hamper us, and maybe not just a physical sense of leaving behind, but a mental sense of leaving behind as well. Of having, we're talking about a mindset, a heart that's totally for the Lord.
I think we're also talking
for His. Yeah.
Carry on, go on, Anne. Sorry. I think we're also talking about complete trust in God. You know, I think what He's saying here is, you don't need to take anything with you. I'm with you. Just go. Don't worry about packing your suitcase. You know, and you know, making sure you've got all the things that you need. Just go. You will be provided for, which is, of course, what happens later on in the reading when he talks about going to someone's home where they'll look after you. So you don't need money, you don't need clothes, you don't need a new pair of sandals because you're going to be looked after. But again, it's quite, to actually do that, for any of us today to be sent out and be told, just don't take anything with you, as Katie's already said, it's difficult because you're leaving all of those things that you depend on behind.
So and also, I was going to say, Karen, it also throws open the fact that there have to be believers that are ready to receive travellers and angels unaware, those that need a place to lay their head and to be fed before they can travel on. Yes.
I think that's right. Even in a culture where hospitality was considered the norm, there's a world of difference between providing a meal because you're obliged to by the culture as opposed to making someone really welcome.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think also that it was interesting in verse 1, they were sent out 2 by 2. So if one of them felt a bit weaker in a certain area or same
that's right,
the other one could step
lift
in
them up,
support the other one and vice versa. So, you know, they weren't alone. But they were supported by each other, which was some help to them, wasn't it?
They were three.
Three as well.
Yes. It was done a few years ago, wasn't it? Do you not remember, Margaret? They did a walk through Kent, didn't they? Dawn Pemberby was one member.
Yes, I remember.
Where they did actually do this. And I think it was quite successful, if I remember right. Do you remember that?
Yes, it was about, 15 years ago, wasn't it? It's quite a little while ago.
Yes, it was done. And also, Karen, I don't know if you were at St Luke's when we did the standing on the corner of the streets in Wheat Street, and there was a great big barbecue at the Brentshire Gardens.
I don't remember that.
And we were invited to talk about Jesus to people and invite them to this barbecue, and that was very successful too. So it is just getting out there.
Perhaps that's something we might do as a church once COVID's all over.
Well, it certainly was. And as I walked around the park, I found last week I was talking to a lady that I've met several walks. She was a retired nurse from the Royal Free. And she was talking to me the other day about how I was feeling and what's going on with me health-wise. And I found I was giving her my testimony.
Yeah, we are.
Good.
And I said, I am going on a bit, aren't I? She said, no, I find it interesting. And then she was talking about her Bible that she'd got and she hadn't taken it out for years. Yeah. And then I was telling her about Jeff Davis and his testimony. And how he read the Gospel of Matthew, and it was worth reading. And I think the Holy Spirit gives you the words to say.
So that brings me to my next question. How happy would we be to go where we are sent? Not where we necessarily want to go, but we've got to, because that's what we see here. He is saying to them, this is my journey into Jerusalem, and this is where I want you to go. In twos, as Margaret just highlighted, but this is where you're to go. So they couldn't choose the villages they went to or the places they went to. They went where they were sent. How comfortable would we be today to go where we're sent, which could be anywhere in the world? Judith.
Well, I already did it, didn't I? Because I was sent here.
Yeah, me too.
I was very unhappy when I first came because I had to leave behind all my friends, everything I knew, everything I'd built in Cambridge for my work.
Yeah.
And I had nothing. And then within a year and a half or so of coming here, I had no husband either. So then I really turned back on God. But I have to say, it's probably the best thing he ever did for me.
It's obedience, isn't it? It's about it doing.
I had no choice. I would have been left alone in Cambridge with no visible means of support because my husband said, I'm going whether you want to go or not. And that was it. So that is very, very hard to do. But having done it, I don't think I'd be as frightened next time.
So I'm going to go on now with the reading. So if you want to put yourselves back onto mute, that would be good so we don't have any background noise. The next part says, whenever you go into a house, first say, peace on this house. If a child of peace lives there, your peace will rest on them. But if not, he will return to you. And the peace that we're talking about here is the shalom peace. It's this wholehearted, complete welcome. It's about, you know, you when you enter the place, there's you know that the people there want you to be there. And when I thought about this, I reflected on a holiday Gordon and I had a couple of years ago. We went with Oak Hall Holidays on the Israel trip. And when we arrived in East Jerusalem, we stayed in a hotel which was owned by Muslims. And I can tell you honestly, from the moment we arrived to the moment we left, Gordon and I felt completely comfortable there. The people there were so helpful. They, you know, there was nothing that they couldn't have done for us. You know, they'd come to the prayer meetings, that they'd discuss what the food was the next day. It was a really, really homely, welcome place. We went from there to Bethlehem and then on to Lake Galilee to two other hotels owned by Jews. And I have to say, in both of these places, it was comfortable, but we weren't made to feel welcome. We were just customers. And there was that sense of not really being welcome, as I say, just being customers. So here, this shalom peace that Jesus is talking about is this wholehearted, complete welcome. And I'm sure you like I am aware that, you know, at this time, this idea of the shalom peace was not really necessarily what most Jews would have expected or wanted at the time. They were anticipating this militarian messiah, this person who was going to kick the hated Jews out of Israel and restore the national status. They were not thinking about this sort of peace. What they wanted, in a sense, was conflict, war. They wanted, that their country restored to them. So the whole idea of welcoming a stranger or strangers who is a disciple of this new Rabbi Jesus, who's doing things differently, who's telling people to love their neighbours, might have been something that most of the people in the villages were going to be reluctant to do. And as somebody said earlier on, inviting someone into your home that you don't know is a difficult thing to do. But these people coming into your village are people who are with this new rabbi who has different ideas and ideas that you actually are not comfortable with or even happy with. And the reading goes on to say that if you're going into a town and they welcome you, eat what is provided, heal the sick who are there and say to them, God's kingdom has come close to you. But if you go into a town and they don't welcome you, go out onto the streets of the town and say, here is the very dust of your town clinging to our feet, and we're wiping it off in front of your eyes. But you should know this, God's kingdom has come close to you. And I think what is being said here is that as disciples, we shouldn't be wasting time on those who are refusing to listen to us. As we said already, there is a massive harvest out there. So we need to be going to the fields where the seed is growing. We need to be going to the places where we're going to be useful. So don't waste your time on those people who are not listening. Just leave the town and go to the next one. So my next two questions are here really is, how easy is it for us to wipe the dust off our feet, to give up on the individuals that we have been trying to share the good news with or would like to, and move on to others who might be or are receptive to the good news? How easy is it to just move on?
It isn't. It's very hard to leave those that you formed relationships with and those you love. I would say commit them to the Lord before you move away. That would be the thing to do. Commit them to him. People have got a choice.
Yeah. Any other thoughts? I think this is a really difficult question, isn't it?
It's difficult and it requires a great deal of discernment, doesn't it, as well, about those people who may be receptive and may not. And as Anne says, of course, we all wrestle with the problem of particularly relatives.
Those that we know.
But I mean, my only reflection on that is one of my sisters who's now died, at one time was so anti all religion, including Christianity. She used to be quite vociferous about how awful they were and she wanted nothing to do with it. But later on in her life, she actually came to the Lord and worshipped in wasn't a Anglican church, it was a bit of a non-conformist sort of do-it-yourself pastor. But nonetheless, she changed completely her view. So as Anne says, you can pray and pray that the Lord will work on people. But we do have to accept the fact that some people will listen. Some people, when you plant the seeds will grow. But just in the parable of the sower, sometimes they won't.
And I think also sometimes it may not be us that shares the good news with them. Sometimes it may be it's somebody else's role or it's somebody else that's good. So sometimes we move on and think, well, you know, we've abandoned that person, but somebody else will come behind us, the right person. And, you know, they come to the Lord. So my next question going on from that is in this reading that we're looking at, the people of the towns and places, the families in the homes, get one chance. How many chances should we give others before we move on?
Many. Loads.
Yes, I think that's right. I think, you don't give up easily.
No.
So you may have to accept that it doesn't happen. Coming back to the relatives thing, I think Karen was making the point, it's quite right, that sometimes relatives are brought to the Lord by much more easily by strangers than by us. And it's a bit like when Jesus was preaching in Nazareth, they didn't respond to him because he was known to them. Sometimes it's a strange thing about human nature, but sometimes the people you know well, you don't respond to in the same way as you might do to someone who's and perhaps that was a good idea, therefore, to have the strangers go out and talk to them. And they could respond to perhaps the stories that they told them.
Very much so.
I think as well, it asks us to consider whether we should continue discipling to somebody, but it doesn't tell us to stop loving them.
No.
And I think that if that's all we do, is and then, like you say, open that door for someone else to be the conduit to the Lord, then that's different. But I don't think we're ever asked to stop loving somebody.
No, praying for them, because I mean, it doesn't say so, but I suspect as they moved from town to town, the ones where in the towns they were made welcome, clearly, hopefully, new disciples were made where to make more disciples. But the towns that in a sense, that didn't welcome them in, I'm sure Jesus and the 70 others were still praying for those towns.
I'm sure.
Because as we see at the beginning of the reading, Jesus is really keen on his journey into Jerusalem to share the new message with as many people as he can. That's why he sent the 70 others out. He's desperate. He's desperate for them to come to know the good news. So I'm sure that they were still praying for them. But it's just, I think, the message really here is that sometimes we need to keep praying and keep loving those people, but we have to move on to other people who may well be more receptive at this time.
Yes,
that's right. Yeah, well, as you started a a meeting. So you would have a meeting together. I'm sure they met up and prayed before they started off the next day.
That's right.
So you would have in mind what you had left behind and commit that back before you started afresh on. That would always be the way to go, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I should think then, as now, you would do that. Yes.
The reading goes on to say, stay in the same house and eat and drink what they provide. And it says that you deserve to be paid. And that clearly is about the fact that you don't take anything with you. Don't go from house to house. So in other words, stay in the house you're in if you've been welcomed. Don't go evangelizing, sharing the good news anywhere else. And I think this comes back to something that Alan shared with us in a recent talk that he did. And if you remember, he said that we need to transform people one at a time. So we need to do the job properly. So we need to spend time with this one person or this small number of people, if it's a family, doing the job properly. So we, when we're going out as these confident, creative disciples, it's not about us bringing everybody in the village to the Lord. It's about doing it slowly, one by one, but doing it properly. So my next question to you is, what do you think the new disciples, how do you think the new disciples would have been nurtured and supported after the 70 others and Jesus had left their place of their village? How do you think they'd be nurtured and supported?
A good question. I would say the one who shows the most transformation maybe would host carry-on meetings of some type of gathering together. It's always good. More than one or two or three. Gather the families together, home groups, house churches, and then build on from there. Yeah,
probably.
You said about he's going to Jerusalem, so they would get, they'd hear the, some of the message about the kingdom of God, and then very soon afterwards there'd be the feast of Passover, so they may be gathering together with families, and then of course if Jesus dies and rises again, that's a, was the very big action. And so they would, if they'd had a visit recently from one of his disciples, they would be prepared to take more interest in his death and resurrection than if they hadn't had a visit. So it was sort of preparing the way. I see it as quite a lot of preparing the way, and then preparing something happens. And sometimes, do you think God sends us to do something and it seems as if we aren't really doing an awful lot? But somehow we're preparing the way for what God knows is coming up next. Right. You know, for an individual, something may be going to happen in their lives. And the fact we've been and spent time with somebody and we think nothing's happened, but God knows what's going to happen next. And I'm just reminded of this conversation of something that happened years ago. I felt so strongly that I should go and see a lady and her family one day who weren't Christians. And I went and I had no reason to turn up. So I had to just sort of bluff my way in and talk and chat. And then her parents turned up and I thought I really missed it because I thought I shouldn't have come because she was expecting family and visitors and I got in the way. Anyway, I said goodbye and left. So a little while later, a mutual friend told me that there'd been an estrangement between the lady and her parents. And the fact that I was there, present, talking to them all at the time, just broke, made the peace. And there was reconciliation. And so, as I said, I'd literally gone in obedience, felt I'd done no good, but it was my presence there that made it possible for the parents and the daughter to have a reconciliation. So we can't always understand why God tells us to do something. And and I hadn't even said anything special. It was the fact I was there in obedience, which made a way for reconciliation. So that's just a little thing that came to mind.
I think you're right, because I think, you know, Jesus is so, it's so important to him that the people in the villages that he goes through learn about the good news and that they're prepared, as Christine says, for what's about to happen. I think that as Jesus and the 70 others leave these places, God is still there. He's still got a plan for these people. So I'm sure that they found many ways to support and nurture one another. So this brings me to my next question. How do we, or how should we, nurture and support the new disciples that we are aware of, or we've helped to bring to the Lord? Remembering that during COVID, we've had lots of people who have joined online services that never have gone to church buildings, regularly have gone to church services online. How do we nurture them? How do we support them?
Keep going. Keep at it.
Well, perhaps that's something as a group that we need to think about in the coming days and weeks.
Be available. I think it's always a good idea. Don't turn anyone away.
That's right.
Be tricky, there. But be there. If called upon.
We've seen it in our family that we've had a family member who's joined another church while we've been in COVID. And it's about trusting as well, that you have to let them have their own journey, and that you know, that you have to let go. At some stage, and know that maybe you've sown some seeds, and perhaps the hardest part is going to be allowing those seeds to grow in all sorts of different ways, and some of them you may struggle with, but actually perhaps how much you let go is as important as how much you hold on as well, because it's no longer your journey at some stage. And they have to go on their own.
You're handing it over, taking your hands off.
It's also very important to make sure that people get the right answers to any questions, so the right people can give them the right answers and they don't come away with the wrong ideas.
Judith, learning to walk. I mean, you guide them, you take their hands at the start, and then they start to walk. And then, you know, they grow older and mature. You know, you've got to let them do their path. The new Christians, like you do a child. I mean, if you're always holding its hand when it's 20, it would never learn to walk, will it? You know, you've got to get them at stepping out. And, you know, they do it in their way, and they will come to rely on God like we have in our lives. And, you know, like Anne said, you've got to be there. And, you know, when they need a bit of guidance or help, or they have a question, just to be there, yeah.
Judith, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I had a question.
Yeah.
And it's a nasty one, I'm afraid.
Good.
How do we develop the discipline of obedience?
I would say the way we develop it is it's about making mistakes, first of all, because being obedient is part of doing what you're asked to do. So first of all, you know, sometimes we may misunderstand where we're being sent, we're being asked to do. So I think it's about being willing to forgive yourself as God forgives you, and it's just learning to do what you're being asked to do, learning to get over the things that block you, like, you know, I can't do that, I can't go there because of, you know, I can't, you know, all of those things that come into our head. You know, when someone says, I'd like you to do this, or somebody else would be better, I think it's about recognizing those things in ourselves and addressing them. It's not an easy thing. We know even Jesus had challenges with being obedient. If you remember in the Garden of Gethsemane, he asked, can you take this away from me? He is obedient, but there's a challenge there. But Jesus shows us, you know, he asked the question, can you take it away from me? No, you can't. Well, then I'll do what you're asking me to do. So I think it's about that awareness of the things that block us from being obedient.
Submission is a good word.
Yeah,
submission. Learning to submit our will to God's will.
So I'm going to move on. And what I'm going to say to you is, I personally find managing rejection quite difficult to manage. And I'm sure some of us also do. So as we go out into the world as these confident, creative disciples of Jesus that we're seeking to be, we need to remember the following lines of the scripture that we heard this morning. We need to remember that when we share the word of God, so when we're doing what God is asking us to do, anyone who hears us hears Jesus. Anyone who rejects us rejects Jesus and God who sent Jesus as our and their saviour. So we need, first of all, to persevere together, and we need to support one another. And we need to recognize that rejection is part of being this confident and creative disciple. So what I'd like to do now is to summarize with you what I think a confident, creative disciple of Jesus looks like. And funnily enough, the first thing on my list is obedience. So Judith, thank you for asking that question. But I think if we are confident, creative disciples, the first thing that we have to manage or to be is to be obedient. The next thing is we have to be risk takers. We need to be willing to take risks and go where we're sent without the things that we might want need with us in order for us to feel secure. We need to be in relationship with God. We need to be able to discern the voice of God from the other voices that we're hearing, which may well, as Judas already highlighted, be preventing us from being obedient. So we need to be in relationship with God and discerning the voice of God from the other voices. We need to be truly trusting God. We need to have that spirit of shalom, that we're welcoming anybody into our presence. We need to be seeking new ways of extending the kingdom, being creative, doing it differently for possibly different people. We need to be rooted in the basic tenets of the Bible. So we don't need to know all of the Bible, but we need to know the basic tenets of the Bible so that we can share that in a way in which these new potential disciples can hear it and understand it. We need to be drenched in prayer. We need to be ready for adventure. And we need to be willing to nurture the people around us. So the final sentence of the reading we had this morning said the 70 came back exhilarated. And I think they were exhilarated because they had seen the power of Jesus. They'd seen what he was able to do. They'd seen that he was this promised Messiah. And that they had been obedient, and because of that, they'd been part of Jesus' ministry. They had seen change. So they were really excited about what they'd seen. As Christine said, in the coming weeks, it's probably not going to be so exciting when this man that they've met, when these others that they've met face crucifixion and resurrection. But they were excited, and therefore, if we are creative people, if we are these confident, creative disciples of Jesus, we will see that same excitement. We will also feel that exhilaration as we see people come to the Lord and as we see people healed and restored. So to close, what I'm suggesting is that perhaps at the end of the service this morning, we should all go and look in a mirror and ask ourselves, do I see a confident, creative disciple of Jesus looking back at me? And if not, what do I need to do within myself to be that? And as we look in the mirror as the Junction congregation, do we see confident, creative disciples of Jesus? And if not, as a team, we need again to look at what we need to do. What do we need to change in order to be better, confident, creative disciples of Jesus? Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Yes, and thank you, Karen, and thank you all those who joined in the discussion there. So thank you to also